Hey, welcome back. Now it's time for Consider This Live, our weekly installment of wonderful conversation. Normally, we do shows that are Northumberland-centric, so we're going to continue that tradition. In the studio with me is Rob Washburn, our resident co-host for this particular show. And you can also check out consider-this.ca. That's the website where these shows are all podcasts, as well as northumberland897.ca. You can get the podcast there as well. Our guest in the studio this afternoon is a resident of Alderville First Nations, and his name is Corey Jacobs. And we're going to be talking to him about Aboriginal youth, about the National Aboriginal Day, which was yesterday, and also about Aboriginal Month, which is the month of June. Before we get to that, I thought we'd play a track, which I think is very relevant, a little track from the Stampeders. Here is Then Came the White Man from 1972. Stampeders from 1972, ladies and gentlemen. That was Then Came the White Man. And, you know, that was an interesting time in North American history because there was associations. The AIM movement was full-blown in the U.S., and there were chapters here in Canada. That was the American Indian Movement. And it was a very, very important. You may remember Marlon Brando in 1972. Remember refusing his Academy Award?
I do.
Because of what happened at Wounded Knee and the arrest of Leonard Peltier and refusing to accept his Oscar for... Why do I forget the name of that movie now? The Godfather, of course. That was The Godfather. Joining us, as they say, in studio is Corey Jacobs. Corey, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
Maybe you want to let the listeners know who you are a little bit and say hello.
All right. Ani, bojo. Gnuba masha dishnaka, zajakto dem, wakumakong donjaba. That name translates to the sound of a soaring eagle, but, you know, call me Corey Jacobs. And I'm Crane Clan, that's the Ajajakto Dem, and my last part is I'm from Wequemeconk First Nation, a member there, but I live over in Alderville.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're here today to talk about First Nations. You grew up, obviously.
Yeah, I do have a strong cultural background, my mom always took me to the Midewin ceremonies, and she's always encouraged me to take part and, you know, be there all the time and listen.
Well, you know, you hear, and I grew up in Toronto, you hear about kids going to Ukrainian school or kids who go to shul on weekends if they're from different faiths, from the Hebrew faith. And, you know, I never heard about people going to native school, no, you know, maintaining that heritage. And, you know, I lived in an area in Toronto which has one of the highest populations of First Nations in the country, and yet we never heard the First Nations languages spoken. They were spoken in your home.
Yeah, yeah, all the time. And, you know, it's little things like knife, mukman, and she just tell me everything in the whole house. Salt, a zita gun, just every word. And she'd always try to say it in Ojibwe, and I'll understand you that way.
Right.
Yeah.
So she still very much clings to the heritage, and that's, you know, that is admirable. I mean, given what we know from what happened at the residential schools, and I got to play the most recent Heritage Minute for the listeners out there who didn't hear it yesterday, on Chani Wenjack, who died of exposure in 1966. He ran away from his residential school. He was 12 years old, and he froze to death, you know, because nobody cared. And unfortunately, he was more than just a statistic. It wasn't an unusual thing for something like that to happen.
No.
Now, I asked you before we came to air, you know, you obviously didn't attend a residential school.
No, I didn't. But
you have family.
I'm obviously affected by it still.
Yes, exactly.
Generations and generations are going to be affected. And my auntie Shirley Williams, she's a professor over at Trent University. She went to residential school, and she was told just to keep her language alive when she went in. You know, just whatever they do, they're gonna try to take it away from you. And she kept it.
Do you believe the term cultural genocide is appropriate?
Yeah, that was appropriate. It's a strong word, but that's what was the truth of it.
Well, exactly. Yeah, no, I would have to concur. I'm often surprised by people who think that, you know, that's a bit of a stretch. Oh, that's a little too harsh, don't you think? But when you look at the history of North America and you look at the treatment of First Nations, who for the most part, when they were forced to accept the white man, did what they could to help them survive, and yet, what was the gift? What was the return on that? Negligible at the very best, horrific at the very worst.
And it's really interesting too, because I mean the terms that you're using come from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report, which took so many years to put together. The incredible number of witnesses brought before the commission to tell that story. I mean, that term doesn't just pop out of the air.
No.
It's based on a lot of fact. I think it's really important also for the listeners to know that Corey's one of my students down at Loyalist College. That's one of the reasons I invited him to come and see us today. He's a very good student of ours, going into his third year down in the program. Corey, I wonder if you'd take a moment and just go back for a moment. Where were you born?
I was born in Sudbury, and you know, I lived there for a little bit with my other extended my aunties, and then we just kind of moved out to the Peterborough area, and I lived mostly there in Peterborough.
Where did you go to school?
Armour Heights, Peterborough, and it was right in my backyard. I could hop the fence, and I was there.
Nice.
What was it like going to school? Talk a bit about that.
It was good.
Growing up native in the public school system, how was that?
I had long hair, and there's this one time, you know, we all line up, they all get everybody to line up, and I'd get my hair pulled, and I'd look behind me, and there'd be like 30 different kids looking at me, and it's like, who did it? You don't know. And it's just like someone just reaching in there, and it's like, oh, God. But I don't It was different because, you know, I was always every time someone talked about natives, I was the professional in the room, I guess. And it's like, I'm learning with everybody else. How am I supposed to learn if you guys are asking me the hard questions? Mm-hmm. And that was one big thing I thought. And, I'll bring up this point, too. In public school, like in the North Shore, like Kawartha Pine Ridge, they teach Ojibwe language. But there's no space for it. You have to take away time from another studies. So when I took language, I never got to go to my John Kemp's class, the science class, and I'm not a chemist today because of it.
Really? Because you chose to preserve your heritage?
I chose to go to that Ojibwe class, and, you know, well, they couldn't make time for it. They had to, well, you want it from science, you want it from math, you want it from
English.
Were
there a lot of kids in the Ojibwe class?
There was a lot of Ojibwe students, but I noticed as I got older, there was more and more like non-Aboriginal students. And I think they're going to have to accommodate that because it's they're going to take away lots of time from different classes.
Well, one of the issues raised during the Truth and Reconciliation Commission is this need now to spend the money and to allot the time for not just First Nations children to reconnect with their heritage and their families, but also for non-natives to understand, because it's only through education and communication that we truly learn. Either we learn the horrific mistakes that we've made in the past, or we learn how to make things better. Either way, it starts with the conversation, and more people I find anyway, and I don't know what your experience has been, but I find more and more people are becoming aware of and seeking a desire to know more.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been your experience?
It has. I got a Michaela Chapman. she asked me. She wore these moccasins. She's like, "Are these appropriate moccasins?" I was like, "Yeah," because if there's no sole, you know, you're connected to the ground. If it's just a piece of leather and your foot, that's the best way to be grounded.
Skin on skin, right?
Yep,
yeah, absolutely.
What other things did you do at home your mother did for you at home to encourage your knowledge of your own culture?
Well, the big thing that she always did was every weekend we'd go back to my grandma's house. And I never knew, but it was a 7-hour trip. And we'd leave, you know, right after school Friday, get there Saturday morning, hang out for a day and a half, and then travel back to make it to school for Monday morning. And it was just all traveling. That was the thing she said, was that you always got to go see your grandma, your grandpa. You got to have that connection, because that was an important thing to be with them.
What sort of memories do you have of knowing your grandma and grandpa?
Lots of labor. Grandpa always, let's go pick some yellow beans, dumplings. We'd always make dumplings. And my grandma, she'd always twiddle her thumbs while she's waiting at home. Yeah, it was always fun. But he had a hard side, too. And that shown, too. And I really appreciate him showing me that hard side.
Did they express to you the effects that they'd felt?
No, they never talked about it at all. It was more like family. All right, we're here. Let's do things. Let's go, you know, to the farm and pick green beans, yellow beans.
Is that a problem for the First Nations, you think? Not just because, again, we've had this Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It's like the skeletons out of the closet.
Yeah.
But like any abuse, it's often difficult for the victims of that abuse to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that needs to be talked about, obviously.
I think maybe I missed that from them, is that I never got to, because my mom would tell me, but I never got to hear it from my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I should have.
Well, we know the last residential schools closed in 1996. It's not a long time ago, listeners. And I have friends of mine who are from Manitoulin, her mother, Helen, was in a residential school. She said it was just horrific. Everything we've heard about residential schools, she said, is true. And what she actually said was, not only is it true, but we're only hearing the good things. So if what we're hearing is the good things, then what really went on there, I mean, it's like the Mount Cashel Boys School. You know, we're hearing more and more about that. We're going to take our first break of the hour. When we come back, we will have more of our conversation with Corey Jacobs. And we are talking about First Nations, Aboriginal issues on our show. When we come back, though, I'm going to play that Heritage Minute for you. It's got good audio. It's better to watch the video, but it's got really good audio. So we'll play that as well as the newest one on treaties as well, which needs to be aired. You know, we got to know these things. We'll be right back.
Boss, Guild, Martin, Guitar Gear, and more with Bruce Walker and Derek Oliver. Brought to you by Long Quaid's Musical Instrument and Lesson Center, Coburg. Every Monday at 10 p.m., we will be reviewing guitar gear and more, then playing the bands who use it. Eric Clapton, Neil Young, Slash, Rush. If you like guitar gear and the equipment that goes with it, join us here on Northumberland 89.7 at 10 p.m.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
Come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas.
Playing June 17th to 23rd. Finding Dory, no free passes accepted. Central Intelligence, no free passes accepted. And Now You See Me Too.
The Rainbow Cinemas are located in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West. Give them a call, 905-372-2444, or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
Do you own a business and would like to promote it? Look no further than Northumberland 89.7. Call us at 905-372-2391 for more details.
And welcome back to the Drive Time. I guess in studio, Corey Jacobs from Alderville First Nations. He's also a student at Loyalist, it is Loyalist. I'm going to talk about it. You're one of Rob's students at Loyalist College. And we're going to talk to you a little bit about your life and journalism. How much of your life influenced your decision to study journalism? Before we get to that, I want to play this clip for you. This is the latest Heritage Minute. It's only a minute long. It's the story of Charlie Wenjack, who in 1966 fled the Cecilia Jeffrey Residential School due to the abuses he was suffering, and upon fleeing was found subsequently frozen to death. Here is his story as told by his sister.
Johnny wanted to go back home. It was 1,000 kilometers away. They forced him to go to the Indian Residential School. More than 150,000 of us children had to go. They wanted to change us.
Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name.
Hallowed be your name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done.
Kill the Indian and the child. It's been called cultural genocide. I survived residential school. My brother Johnny did not.
Chani Wenjack was one of thousands of children who died due to Canada's residential school system. More than 80,000 survivors and their families still live with its legacy today.
And there you go. That is the
Treaty
latest.
And Cree.
I'll play that one after the next break, sorry. But again, that's the story of Chani Wenjack and one of, as they said, more than 150,000 children who were forced.
I'm curious, Corey, you're listening to that. What's going on inside of you as you hear that?
Well, it really, I could feel it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Because I actually know somebody who, Don, he'd had a really bad experience. He'd tell me that they'd lay your hands down and they'd hit your hands with a ruler. And he grabbed that ruler and beat up that teacher and ran away from the school.
It's impactful. It truly is. I saw this yesterday for the first time and felt the same thing. So, you know, we'll take a second
to
compose ourselves. But again, you know, it's exactly what I said it was.
Well, you know, what's incredible is that right now the people who went to the commission and told their stories are fighting to keep those records public, to make sure that we don't lose those stories. And I think that that's a really, really important aspect of the Truth and Reconciliation, that we don't lose the original evidence, all the testimony that was given, all mm-hmm. those stories that are being told. And I think, you know, when you hear something like that, it's so important. And to have access to that for future generations so that people can go back and nobody will dispute. You know, there's the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was done in sworn testimony before a royal commission. We can't lose it, so that we don't turn our backs on it for a second time. Which is,
well,
I think,
and,
a critical,
you know,
piece.
You make a really good point about oral history, because that is the history of the First Nations. The First mm-hmm. Nations don't there isn't really a written record, if you will. That was one of the reasons why land claims have been so difficult for mm-hmm. First Nations. You know, because the white man can say, well, I got a deed from the crown. You know, where's your deed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is no crown. There wasn't a crown before you got here,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is why it's so very important. The story of Chani Wenjack. The next story we're gonna I'm gonna play for you on treaties as well, because, you know, if we want to keep this alive, we're gonna have to start writing it down. We're gonna have to start keeping a written record of what has
some
happened.
Some type of record,
absolutely. But the stories still get passed on. I mean, I'm sure you've heard all kinds of stories growing up, maybe not necessarily about the residential school, but the history of your peoples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So journalism, was that something that maybe your life experiences, were those some of the stories you wanted to be able to tell when you studied journalism? Was being in a First Nations or Aboriginal Canadian important to you in terms of journalism?
Well, my name, my Ojibwe name, it literally translates the sound of an eagle flying by. And what the eagle does is deliver a message. And I broke it down with Rob the other month, and I said, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to be a journalist delivering messages, you know, from whoever, right? I'm going to tell these stories, and that's why I think I'm on this path that I've been on. And just in 2014, Loretta Saunders, she was at St. Mary's University in New Brunswick, St. Mary's University, and she was doing a thesis on missing and murdered Indigenous women, and she became missing and murdered herself. And it's just so sad that she was taken away from that.
I don't think I've ever heard that story.
Yeah.
So she was writing a piece on missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Yeah, she was writing a thesis.
She was an Indigenous woman herself.
Yeah, Inuit, Inuk, okay. Woman. Yeah.
And then she became one of the many victims.
Yeah. And she was, it makes it even sadder that she was only a month and a half pregnant, I think. And, you know, her killers only got the one first degree murder charge. Yet there was two life forces involved. And that's another thing, right? If, if an embryo is, do they count as a life? And
You know, in Canada, the jury's still out on that one, man.
Yeah.
So this desire to be a journalist, journalism is a form of storytelling. Why do you want to be a storyteller? Why do you want to tell these types of stories?
Native people have always been storytellers. Yeah. And I think at this time in my life and in Canada's life, that it's a perfect time for these stories to come out in an honest and truthful way that people will listen. Because maybe back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, they would have just been, oh, yeah, another Indian talking.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it really, even in my own lifetime, I only remember hearing from Elijah Harper. When Elijah Harper stood up and spoke about Meech Lake, and he talked to how it really would impact not just Canadians, but all of the peoples in this country, mm-hmm. and how it was just not something that that he could support based on the breakdown of powers, based on the redistribution, based on certain rights. It completely ignored any First Nations negotiation. There weren't no aspect of that in the Meech Lake Accord, and it's the first time I can remember as a young person really thinking. I mean, in Canada, I mean, we all know about what happened in Wounded Knee in the 70s, but in Canada, he was, in my mind anyway, one of the first Canadian First Nations leaders that I actually heard and felt as though I could really feel what he was saying. I've always had an affinity for First Nations.
Well, it's really interesting what Corey says. I mean, when you look at the stereotypes that have been perpetuated in the mainstream media, you know, First Nations, Indigenous peoples, you know, they're portrayed as warriors in moments of conflict. They're
environmentalists.
You know, or you know, they're dead, or they're drunk, or they're dancing in their cultural costumes, or there's been a disaster. And that's the way it's been covered. And, you know, it's interesting to see a young man like yourself who's interested in doing journalism mm-hmm. that doesn't fit into those stereotypes.
Well, the very first mm-hmm. Victoria Cross awarded to a Canadian soldier, mm-hmm. an actual Canadian soldier, was awarded to a First Nations fellow who fought in the First World War.
Do you know that the First Nation peoples per capita...
The World War, actually, sorry.
...have served in the military in the Great Wars more per capita than any other... Yep. Canadians, you realize the incredible contributions that they've made here and there. You know, these are the stories I think that, you know, that are crying out to be told. There was a really good one in the paper there on Monday I saw about the David Mowat, the historian, did on the ancestor, the chief that served in 1812. Wasn't that it, Dave?
Yeah. We're talking about Jim Marston's ancestor, former Chief John Sunday.
That's it.
Let me read this piece to you. It's not a very long one, so it's real quick. We'll get into this for you. By the way, it's from Valerie MacDonald, former Alderville chief recognized. During a special Ottawa ceremony at Governor General David Johnson's residence in Rideau Hall, former Alderville First Nations chief was recognized posthumously for fighting in the War of 1812. The presentation of a banner, medal, and certificate filled a void left when the Alderville Chief John Sunday was omitted from the 200th anniversary recognition events, according to current Alderville Chief James Marsden. There were ceremonies all over Ontario in 2013 on the anniversary, and somehow we were missed, he said. And I appealed. We know our own history, he added. Chief Sunday was in the Battle of Chrysler Farm, east of Brockville, and he and other Mississauga warriors took part, Marsden continued. Alderville historian Dave Mowat did the investigation and presented the evidence to the lead to that led to the Chief Sunday's recognition. Chief Marsden noted that the Defense of Canada's flag is a rifle and a tomahawk cross. On the wall of past chiefs in Alderville's boardroom hangs a picture of Chief Sunday. The ceremony honoring him took place earlier in the month with representatives from Alderville in attendance at the at Rideau Hall. So again, 200 years in the coming, but it's a recognition long overdue. How does that make you feel?
Well, we've been put on the back burner, and you just leave him on the back burner, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard one.
Well, again, something I rarely get an opportunity to ask persons of the First Nations is, you guys built this country. You were here before, but you've built this country. Mm-hmm. And yet it's like when they were taking photographs of the last spike being driven by the rail companies, mm-hmm, out west. And you see the pictures of all the workers, and it's all white faces. No natives, no Chinese, only white folks. And it's the white guys it's only white people that get credit for the building of this country. And yet, without the contributions from First Nations, we wouldn't be where we are right now, I would argue.
I would say, hands down, the War of 1812 would not have been won if it hadn't been the alliance between the British and the mm-hmm, First Nations. They both had interest and stake, and they fought as bravely as any British soldier.
Absolutely. Well, and they were fighting for their land too, though, right? Which was ultimately given away. So in the Treaty of Ghent, which was just a shambles.
I'm curious, though, Corey, what are some of the stories that you've been covering while you've been training, and why have they been significant?
Well, one of the stories that I kind of liked covering was the spring bear hunt. And I thought that was very interesting, just to, how are Canadians hunting now? And it's all being, there's money involved, and hunting used to be free. Like, as long as you can go out and kill the animal, you could eat it. But now you have to pay for it. They have to be managed. The whole forestry needs to be managed. And it's like, why? Why can't it just be alive again?
Well, that's an interesting point you're making here, because I was always under the impression, and I'm sure most non-natives are under the impression, that the First Nations they have the right to hunt at will. Mm-hmm. And that you're telling us that's not the case.
No. Reserve, you can hunt on a reserve, no problem. But you still have to do it like every other Canadian. You have to register your guns, and you have to get tags, but like on the reserve, it's a little different. It's I don't want to say free game, but I can go shoot a deer on the reserve, and eat it, and I have.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a huge part of the hunter gatherer heritage of the First Nations, right?
Yeah. And my treaty specifically says I'm allowed to fish in any river adjacent to Lake Ontario, and I believe isn't that the whole world?
Well, any body of water that's a contributory of the Great Lakes, yeah, Lake Ontario specifically, with your treaty. Is that Treaty 9?
Williams Treaty.
Williams Treaty.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned treaties. I'm going to play this clip here, Heritage Minute. Again, this is the second one. This story starts in Fort Albany in Ontario. And again, they're talking about treaties, or as the First Nations say, Nasku Mitwin. Is that right? We'll get the proper pronunciation in a moment, folks. Anyway, we'll get it in a minute. Anyway, it's only a minute long. We'll be right back after this.
Treaty in Cree is Nasku Mitwin, an oral agreement.
Nasku Mitwin, Nemes Ochake.
And our agreements were always spoken. For George Spence, the core of treaty was Wichihioin, to help one another.
And so we, the commissioners...
He was there for the making of Treaty 9, where the Cree were told...
We will honor this agreement together, for as long as the sun shines and the waters flow.
The Cree made their mark because they were assured that the land would be shared, and they would always be able to harvest what they needed. George Spence was my great-grandfather. In his life, he saw many promises of the treaty go unfulfilled.
Treaties were essential to the creation of Canada. First Nations still fight for the agreements to be honored.
Still fighting to this day.
Hello.
And there are areas where there are no treaties. No treaties at all. In Western Canada, for instance, the majority of British Columbia, there are no treaties.
Mm-hmm.
Whole regions, whole swaths of our nation where... they just rode in with their guns, essentially, man, and that was the way it was taken over. you know, I think about Louis Riel. I think about the rebellions out there in the Northwest and all of the fighting that went on there, calling those people rebels, calling those people traitors. When, you know, we know now from the lens of history that all of that was a lie.
Corey, do you ever get angry about this?
Yeah, I do. just as you asked me that, I felt like something boiled up there. But, like, because those treaties, you know, they're talking words, all kinds of words that people didn't understand. And they're like, well, you could hunt, but that doesn't include fishing, right? Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come up with all kinds of bureaucratical words, and it only means you get potato. the one reserve over in Manitoba, they're supposed to get flour, potatoes, and something else, and then instead they just change it to $5. You just get $5 instead. And you can go a lot further with flour and potatoes than $5.
Well, and again, $5 at that time was probably the equivalent to about $500 now, which, again, there's no consolation there, but it's the same thing. Well, here's the irony, because, of course, now in our modern legal system, if you sign a contract that you don't understand, you can get out of that contract. Right? I mean, you can't be forced to sign a contract you don't understand legally. That's why they tell you to get your legal advice and make sure you got your legal ducks in a row. But back here, back at this time, they didn't even provide lawyers. There was no legal support for the First Nations. It was drafted by some guy, you know, in the case of Ontario, some guy in Queen's Park drafts the legislation.
Yeah.
You know, and just as then as is now. And then they tell you what it says. But it could say a whole lot of other things.
Corey, when I know because of your training and the things you want to do in the world, you're very sensitive to current affairs and being knowledgeable like this. But what are your friends? Are they hold similar views? Do they get angry? Do they have the same culture and background that you have? What's it like in your social circle, people who are contemporaries?
Everyone just kind of wants to just do what everyone else is doing, like... I live in Alderville, and thankful that it's close to a lot of cities, because a lot of other reserves are like Moose Factory, right? You got to fly to get there, and you got ice roads, and you got all these other things that make life harder just to be a normal Canadian who's on Facebook all the time. And even then, I don't even like posting good Facebook things, because then those kids up north see me, oh, I'm doing this and that, and they can't. And I seen a picture, a case of water is $136 up north, and it's like, who's got that much money for water? And it just, stuff like that, it really boils my blood.
Well, you know, I hesitate to ask you, but I will. I mean, you live here, as you say, you're close to a number of major centers. It's Peterborough to the north, Toronto, and Kingston to the east and west, not much of a travel. But the kids up in Attawapiskat, for instance, or Churchill Falls, you know, I mean, how do you feel... The relationship, I mean, have you, is there a relationship with the kids to the far north? Is there a way of connecting? And is there some way that maybe their lives can be made better through their communications with the kids down here?
Well, what I did for them, we've been having a water walk with my mom. She's been doing the water walk. She's been walking around Stony Lake, Little Lake, and we just did Little Lake this year. And that around that time, it was around Mother's Day, and that was shortly after those Attawapiskat boys. And we actually had a prayer, a big tobacco tie, and we got everyone to kind of carry it and you know, put their prayers into it. And eventually, when we walked all the way from Trent all the way around from Little Lake, we burnt it with the sacred fire that we had there. And I don't know how else to like, other than to physically go up there and, you know, talk to some people. That's how I've been doing it, is sending prayers. And that's one of the main things, is just you got to send prayers the right way too.
How I mean, it's got to be very difficult for you, having, you know, you grew up with the First Nations Reserve here, where, as I say, access to amenities. Kids to the north don't have that. The disparity between the bands, the disparity between the reserves. You know, you hear about, you know, some reserves out west where folks are making all kinds of money. They got great sweet deals with their resource developments because they were able to get a good deal. But then you got other areas, which are like third world. Like, you know, you always hear from governments, oh, well, it's up to the First Nations to help other First Nations. It's their responsibility. It's, you know, you can't always go to the government. How difficult is that, though? I mean, how realistic is it for those bands to be able to rely on other bands that are doing much better, perhaps, in the country?
Well, I've seen Rama help out other, you know, other bands, and they'll create organizations that kind of funnel money towards other Aboriginals, but there's no real, like, going to that reserve and then just, like, building something or something. I don't know.
I think it's important people understand that Rama is the place where Casino Rama is, and that the gambling revenues are shared between the province and the First Nations there. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're able in that position to do that. I just wanted to put that background out there so that people understand what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you look at areas, I mean, one of the problems they have up there is fresh water. They have real issues with fresh water. A lot of it has to do with the large corporations dumping massive amounts of waste. And yet they get to walk away. They get to walk away without having to pay the bill on that. And then everyone points the finger saying, oh, it was poorly managed. I mean, how do you, that's got to frustrate the hell out of you.
It does. And that's why I'm into this journalism, because I, you know, if I could tell those stories from First Nations perspectives instead of, oh, this was a large company that did this. It's like, well, I'm going to show them the people that are affected.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference when you talk about a First Nations perspective than, say, another perspective? What's the difference there for you, Corey?
Lived experience is a big thing. It's, you know, being connected to the culture and then having that connection to Mother Earth. And then just going even further, connection to the sun, the moon. And it's a lot bigger than just the planet, I think.
How does that affect, though, when you sit down in an edit suite, or you're going to put together some audio, or you're going to write some text? How is that different, the way that you're going to tell that story?
I don't know. I think my creativity is a little different than other people's, because I've been hearing the drum a lot, and I don't know, that's that heartbeat. I always think about that heartbeat every time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're gonna take our next break here first. When we come back, we're going to talk about that heartbeat, because what some people see as noise, or what some people hear as now, you make a really good point, because the drum represents the heartbeat of the planet. It is the heartbeat of the Earth. We'll be right back, listeners.
They called us slackers and cynics, adrift and apathetic. But you and I know we are much more than that. Join me every Thursday night at 7 p.m. for Deconstructing X, the musical story of a generation. Each week, we'll look at the events that influenced the music of Generation X and how the music influenced events. Deconstructing X, Thursday night at 7 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Beat the rush. Get ready for the hot summer. Install a new air conditioner from Pritchard's Climate Care, starting as low as $2,900. Rebates available on qualifying equipment. At Pritchard's Climate Care, we care about your comfort because we're your neighbors. Give us a call at 905-885-8216. That's 905-885-8216. Free estimates are available. Offer expires June 30th.
The growing season is upon us, so come out Saturdays from 8 to 1 and experience all that the Port Hope Farmers Market has to offer. Come pick from a variety of fresh local fare, or choose from a selection of fine quality meats, cheeses, organic plants, handmade crafts, and more. See you at the Port Hope Farmers Market every Saturday, located behind Town Hall. Or visit our Wednesday market, noon to 5 p.m., at Gilmer's Home Hardware on Toronto Road. Or go to porthopefarmersmarket.ca and like us on Facebook.
Tune in Mondays, 10 to 11 p.m. for Guitar Gear and More, brought to you by Long & McQuaid Musical Instruments, the show that reviews guitar gear and more and then showcases the bands who made it happen. You'll hear interviews with local talent and a special Long & McQuaid segment that keeps you in the loop of upcoming music trends and events, plus expert tips from our Long & McQuaid experienced instructors. Guitar Gear and More, Mondays, 10 to 11 p.m.
Entering Stonewood Gallery is like visiting old and dear friends, but friends with impeccable taste. Dan and Kim Daigle feature the work of local and Canadian artisans, from custom furniture to antiques, wood turnings, jewelry, fine art, photography and giftware. It's all at Stonewood Gallery, just north of the 401 at 3311 Burnham Street North. Wednesday through Saturday, 10:30 to 5, come in and be delighted.
Missed your favorite program on Northumberland 89.7? Don't worry, you can catch up on news, events, and missed shows on our website at northumberland897.ca.
Welcome back. This is sort of the last 10 minutes here. Rob, you had a point you wanted to make.
Well, we were just talking about the Truth and Reconciliation while we were on the break, and I was saying that I really don't think it's the responsibility of young people like Corey. I know Corey gets angry, but it's not that generation that should be feeling guilty about what has happened, and it's not that generation that should be paying the price. It's our generation, Dave, you and me, and we're the ones that should be working on the reconciliation. And meanwhile, young people like Corey and my daughter and your son and all these young people should be forging a new relationship and hopefully going forward in a new way, in a new paradigm. And that's what I was really talking about.
Sure. Sowing new seeds.
Yeah, and I wonder how you feel about that when you look at your future and what's going on around you right now. I mean, is there room for optimism in there?
Oh, yeah. I'm always optimistic about the future of Native people. And even just in my own little circle, you know, I've got access to different scholarships that a lot of white people think, you know, oh, you got this and that. It's just like, well, it was a long time to coming, right? And I'm always optimistic, right?
I always use the landlord-tenant dispute thing because people say, oh, the natives, all we do is give them free stuff. I go, well, that's like complaining to your landlord because you got to pay rent. Right? I mean, the reality is you just rolled in and took over. There's also the other analogy I like to use, which is, you know, it's like you invited a whole bunch of people over to your house to have a party, and then 20 minutes into it, they tell you, hey, thanks, get the hell out. But we'll be partying here, you know?
So. But it's a lot deeper. I mean, when we listen to Heritage Minute, nobody's going to bring that young man back.
No.
And there's a lot of suffering, and there's a lot of pain, and we, you know, there's... I don't know whether you knew this, but there's something like 70 different indigenous languages in Canada. And some of those are on
that
the
survived.
Cusp.
That survived.
That's
that,
right.
There's only 70 left.
And we're on the cusp of losing a lot more if we don't take care. And so there's a lot of work to be done in order to set this boat right. And like I said, I think, Dave, you and me and our generation need to do that. In the meantime, I think, you know, people like Corey, of course, they have the right to say what they need to say. But I also hope that they can find a light, a different path that allows them to go forward and to do good things in the world and to reforge that relationship for the betterment of our country. Because I think it'll mean new opportunities and new ways to do things.
Well, we're already seeing that. A number of initiatives, you know, hiring, there's Aboriginal youth entrepreneur programs that have been recently established. And, I mean, if you watch APTN, you're going to see a lot of ads. Even the existence of APTN, for crying out loud. I mean, that is a phenomenon of itself. And I don't know how many people out there are watching APTN, but they've got some fantastic programming on APTN. So if you haven't checked it out, it's the Aboriginal Persons Television Network. Check it out. Corey, you know, journalism, you want to tell the stories. Now, I'm hoping that the stories you want to focus on are the stories of today and the stories that will bring us through to tomorrow. But also a reminder that we can't forget. You know, I always tell people to be the elephant in the room because elephants never forget. You know, and as long as we don't forget, we can make the right steps.
Well, I find when I'm writing a story for journalism that, like an Aboriginal story, that I can't just go right into the story. I always there has to be this context of what an Indian status Indian is, a Métis. There's all these different terms, and it's like, well, how do I incorporate that into my story? And that's something I have trouble is just getting all the context right.
So I didn't know this, Dave, maybe you did, but this was the 20th anniversary of National Aboriginal Day yesterday.
Yes.
And you were doing some stuff on your show, I know, yesterday to celebrate the cultures and the peoples. I want to ask you, Corey, do you think it should be a statutory holiday?
Well, I'll take that day off every day. But I think it should, yeah, because it's everybody. Aboriginals are the fastest growing population right now, and you know, how long is it going to take before we actually say yes? Let's have summer solstice, right? Let's enjoy the longest day of the year together, all of us, not just Aboriginals.
Sure, true enough.
Canadians,
true enough.
All
I
Canadians.
Mean, like I said, we're joking about the Druids yesterday because, of course, they were partying it up pretty hard yesterday as well because that's a big day for them.
The Druids.
Oh. The Druids, yeah. Again, it's all about the Standing Stones, listeners. So what's coming up for you? Are there some powwows coming up that you're going to be attending?
There's all kinds of powwow. Yeah, this is powwow season coming up. The biggest one I like going to is my own, Wequimacon, because they're on the 53rd annual.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been going on for a long time. And the 50th one was huge. But, you know, it's always my favorite place to go for the summer.
What makes it so good?
The lake. Just being right off Lake Superior, right on top of the Lake Superior. And just connecting with all my family that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Get to go see my brother and my nieces.
And nephews. I mentioned the drum. I mean, the drum is integral. And for those people that have never taken part in a drum circle, actually, there are people here in town that have drum circles. My sister-in-law enjoys the drum circle quite often.
Yeah, my brother does it every week. And all
It's the heartbeat of the land. That's the part, the most important thing I learned years and years ago about what drumming is and why it's so important and why it's an integral thing. Because if you ever take part in a drum circle, and you know, I don't recommend you do it in an enclosed room necessarily, especially one made of concrete, but outside where you're supposed to be doing it, communing with nature and talking to the earth and connecting with that heartbeat, you can feel the energy as the drum circle progresses. It starts slow and then it builds. And it's not just the sound, it's the energy that is born from that sound that sort of draws the circle together. Even if you're standing on the periphery, I mean, I've talked to people who've been to drum circles up in Alderville and that have said, you know, you may walk by as it's happening at one of the powwows up there and you think, oh, I'm going to check that out. But as you get closer, you actually feel yourself being drawn into it because it's that powerful.
Mm-hmm. What's been your experience, Corey, when you've participated?
Well, there's a lot of people, like when I dance, you dance for everyone who can't dance. And that's always been a thing. And because not everyone can dance and not everyone wants to dance. And it's hard to get up there and to be in a regalia and then to have all these visitors staring at you. And I don't want to say judging you, but there are competition powwows where you do get judged. And that's kind of what scares me away sometimes, is that all those eyes judging you. But, you know, that's what my mom says. Get in there. Always get in there.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in this afternoon, Corey. Really appreciate your stories and your insights. And I'd love to have you back any time, actually, if you want to come back and talk about anything else. Rob, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Dave.
Consider This Live is heard every week right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. We're going to close the show with some Neil Young. In honor of the First Nations, here is Pocahontas on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. I'll be back tomorrow, listeners. By the way, we don't write the world. We just report it here.
Aurora Borealis, the icy sky at night, battles cut the water in a long